Bodine worked on his ranch that summer of 1875, seldom leaving the spread except to go into a small town located on the Clear River for supplies. He saw no sign of two wolves, but Lone Dog and his bunch were burning and scalping in both Montana and Wyoming. The army was chasing them all over the countryside, to no avail. Walker's militia was shooting every stray Indian they could find, regardless of tribe. As the summer began to wane and the leaves began to turn, it became apparent that open war between the settlers and the Indians was about to come to a head. By this time, the government expedition into the Black Hills had ended, and Colonel Dodge, the commander of the expedition, had located and lined out wagon roads and sites for military outposts. The treaty had been broken, and prospectors were pouring into the sacred grounds. This move so angered Sitting Bull and Crazy Horse, they began buying arms and ammunition from whomever they could. And if that didn't work, they would just kill the traitors and take what they needed. By September of 75, Crazy Horse and Sitting Bull and their followers were engaged in open warfare with any settlers found in the Forbidden Region. The government made an offer to buy the region. A gathering was called, and the chiefs voted unanimously to refuse the sale. When Bodine learned of this, he rode to his father's ranch.
Stack up on ammunition, Dad. All hell's about to break loose.
But Sitting Bull and Crazy Horse are both over in Dakota territory.
They won't be there long. As soon as the army starts a campaign against them, they'll move west and link up with the Cheyenne and the Arapaho.
You seen two wolves?
No. He asked that I not bother him until the leaves turn.
It's about that time, boy.
I know. About another week of work at the ranch and I'll go see him.
Bodine looked out at the corral and over his father's spread.
Sure looks good, Pa.
You helped make it what it is, Matt. Your brother Carl come along just a tad too late to remember much about those bad old years your Ma and me and you went through. We had some lean times and some hard scrapes.
Slim Man came by the ranch last week. Took a chance doing it, too.
Slim Man? Do I know him?
I doubt it. He's like two wolves in that he's a half-breed. Sometimes he stays on the reservation, and sometimes he just wanders. Slim Man told me that he heard the army is chomping at the bit for war with the Indians, especially the Sioux and the Cheyenne.
Medicine Horse and his followers have been good to us, boy. There was that winter that I hurt my back, and had it not been for the game Medicine Horse supplied us, none of us would have made it.
I remember.
You be careful riding out in the wilderness, boy. That Lone Dog is crazy.
Bodine touched his 3-stone necklace that was never removed from his neck.
He is, but this frightens him. He doesn't want any trouble with Medicine Horse. I'll be careful, Pa.
It was the second day out, and Bodine watched Rowdy's ears as they came up, and he felt the horse tense under him. He had been expecting Lone Dog to find him. Lone Dog and some 20 of his warriors came charging out of the ravine to surround him. Bodine sat his horse and watched Lone Dog's approach. The Indian was painted for war, and his horse's mane had several scalps tied to it.
Why does Lone Dog insult me so?
Bodine will not live long in his fine house once we have reclaimed the land that is ours. The silly charm around your neck will not protect you then.
You will not reclaim the land, Lone Dog. You will only die on it.
The braves with Lone Dog drew back, not knowing what might happen next. Lone Dog had proclaimed himself a chief, and one did not speak to a chief in this manner. The Cheyenne riding with Lone Dog resented the man's referring to Medicine Horse's amulet as a silly charm.
Listen to me. If you continue on the path, killing women and children, you ruin your chances for peace. Only with peace do any of you have a future.
Bodine has had a vision through pain?
Bodine opened his shirt, showing them all the scars on his chest, the pain he had endured as he entered manhood, hooked to the medicine pole.
I have had many visions since becoming a human being. The pins could not be torn free from my flesh. The older man who was wise in the ways of the spirits who ruled the earth so decreed. I slept on a hilltop and held many conversations with the wolf. Two Wolves was on the next hill and did the same as I for 5 days and nights.
Even Lone Dog drew back at this. Just one day of the self-torture and visions was considered enough to enter a young man into full manhood and be considered a warrior. Bodine took a small pouch from his pocket and opened it, showing them all the wolf hair in the medicine bundle.
The wolf gave this to me.
Bodine's medicine is good. He is truly a human being. But that does not mean I must follow your words. I, too, am a warrior. And in my visions, I saw myself driving the whites from our lands. Each of us must pursue our own visions.
Bodine is brother to the wolf.
The brave pointed in terror at something near Bodine. Bodine did not turn his head or cut his eyes. He knew he had to play this hand out with his cards close to his vest. Whatever the warrior was looking at had touched his heart. Bodine hoped only that it wasn't a grizzly about to slap him out of the saddle or a puma about to leap. The warriors turned their horses, leaving Bodine in a cloud of dust. Only when they had gone did Bodine look behind him. A gray wolf stood on a hilltop, looking at him.
Brother!
The wolf turned and was gone. Bodine rode nonstop until he reached the lodge of Medicine Horse. He was greeted with open arms.
My son, it has been so long. Now I have both my sons to share my lodge.
It is good to see my father. I have thought of you much over the months.
Medicine Horse was still a tall and powerful and handsome man, but his smile slowly faded as he looked at his adopted son.
There is trouble on the land, son. He who mounts the clouds has had a vision, and it was not a good one.
He who mounts the clouds was a very important man in the tribe, and his words were always listened to closely. Medicine Horse forced a smile back on his face and took Bodine's arm.
I must be getting old. I'm forgetting my manners. Come, we will eat, and you can rest, and then we will talk.
Bodine ate the stew of buffalo and wild onions and Indian potatoes, and then rested for a time in the lodge of his adopted father. He opened his eyes as the flap was pulled back.
Brother.
Bodine was shocked at Two Wolves' appearance, but managed to keep his expression bland. Two Wolves had lost weight, and Bodine was sure he had been fasting, seeking a vision to give him direction.
You are rested.
I am.
Come, we must talk.
They walked through the large camp.
My father and I shared the same vision, Bodine. There can be no war. Medicine Horse has spoken. He has ordered that I return to the white side of me. You know that my mother left me a large sum of money. Medicine Horse has said that when I leave this village, I should not wear the Indian clothing, but instead the clothing of the white man. He is my father, and I must obey.
Bodine was glad, but he hid that joy, for he felt that Two Wolves was filled with sorrow.
There is more, Bodine. My father has met with government men, and he has agreed to the reservation life. The tribe, his followers will be settled, for the time being, at the Standing Rock Reservation in the Dakotas. Colonel Travers has suggested that you lead them there. Our father would be honored if you would accept.
You know I will, Two Wolves.
My own heart is heavy and filled with pain. My father has also said that the others will fight. But it is a fight they cannot win.
When do we leave?
We shall begin packing in the morning. It will be a long trek without joy.
But our father's people will be alive, Two Wolves.
Yes, in a manner of speaking.
The trek of Medicine Horse's people was to begin in 5 days. They would follow the Yellowstone up about 150 miles and then turn straight east into the Dakotas. When they came to the Cannonball, they would turn south until they reached the reservation. They had agreed that the army could escort them, only if Bodine led the trek. Colonel Travers jumped at that, silencing Lieutenant Gary with a hard look. Lieutenant Gary would lead the army patrol escorting the Cheyenne to their new home. Bodine was not looking forward to several weeks on the trail with Gary. What made it even more interesting was that Lone Dog's following had strengthened during this summer. His band now numbered close to 300 braves, all well-armed and all cocked and primed for war. Lone Dog and his braves had been making life miserable for many and ending it for a few. And Lone Dog had made it clear that he considered Medicine Horse a coward for agreeing to a return to reservation life. Lone Dog just might try to attack the column before they got too far along the Yellowstone. Bodine approached Two Wolves with his theory.
He would be a fool to do so. The Cheyenne would eat him alive. What he will probably do will be to wait until we return with the army patrol and attack us then.
You're probably right. These are not green troops, with the exception of Lieutenant Gary. They'll stand firm.
Two Wolves agreed. The following dawn, they were ready to go. Medicine Horse stood in the spreading sunlight and looked back at the land the government had promised would be his forever.
Forever. Strange that with white men, how forever is such a short time. My people shall no more look on this valley. I have spoken, and it is so.
He turned to face Bodine.
It is time.
Medicine Horse walked to his pony and swung onto its back. He rode slowly to his position near the head of the long column and waited, Two Wolves at his side. Two Wolves had cut his long hair and wore jeans and boots and a leather jacket. Bodine stepped into the saddle and walked Rowdy past his adopted father and his blood brother, past a line of mounted soldiers. He paused at Lieutenant Gary's side.
All hail the conquering heroes, Lieutenant, and all that crap. We kill those who fight us and punish those who have been our friends. Let's go.
I didn't ask for this assignment, Bodine, and I don't like it either. I am aware of the peacefulness of this band of Cheyenne. If it makes any difference to you, I think this is wrong.
I didn't mean to lash out at you, Lieutenant. We have a job to do. Let's do it.
Move him out, Sergeant.
Let's move him out.
I have an uneasy feeling about this, Gary. I think this is just the beginning of Medicine Horse and his people getting the short end of the stick.
I agree with you, Bodine. I think this move to the Dakotas is only a temporary one. I think the government is deliberately separating the Cheyenne. It was my understanding that the permanent reservation for the Northern Cheyenne was to be in Montana, next to the Crow Reservation. The borders of the Cheyenne Reservation were to be the Tongue to the west and the Rosebud to the east. It could be that the government is trying to separate the Cheyenne for Medicine Horse's own good, to keep his peaceful tribe away from the warring tribe. Have you thought about that?
I have to keep that thought in mind, Gary, to keep from getting angrier.
Yeah, I think I understand how you feel, Bodine.
The long trek of Medicine Horse and his people from Montana to the Dakotas was made without incident. On the day before they were to be met by the Indian agent at the northernmost tip of the reservation, Medicine Horse came to Bodine.
We shall say our goodbyes here, my son. You will not look again on my face.
Medicine Horse,
No, hear my words. I have placed myself in disgrace to save my people. A chief must take both the glory and the humiliation when one or the other is deserved. I'm entrusting the fate of Two Wolves into your hands. Keep him safe and out of the Valley of the Rosebuds. I have had a vision that will be shared by many chiefs over the coming months. After the snow flies this winter, stay away from the river that runs through the Rosebuds. You have been a good son, and I'm glad that you've stopped falling down a lot.
Do you know Custer, Medicine Horse?
Yellow Hair? Yes, he's a great warrior. Why do you ask?
I had a dream the other night. It was disturbing. It was June, Father. I'm sure of that. I saw many soldiers falling upside down into an Indian camp. Yellowhair was among them. It was a great battle. It was also the beginning of the end.
For whom?
For you.
Ah, we have shared the same vision, my son. That's good and that's bad. It is good that you are truly a human being. It is bad that you must continue the struggle within your heart. Just as your brother Two Wolves must always struggle. We've spoken for the last time, my son. This is goodbye. Remember my words.
Medicine Horse walked away. He did not look back. At the plantation, Lieutenant Gary addressed his men just before setting out on their trip back home.
Heads up, troops. Lone Dog is probably gonna hit us. Bodine thinks it will be when we're only a couple of days from the garrison. We'll be thinking of a warm bed and hot food and won't be worrying about an Indian attack. I agree with him. But between here and the fort, We've got several thousand other Sioux and Cheyenne to worry about, not to mention Pawnee and Arapaho. So stay alert.
2 days later, Gary's tune was somewhat different. He stretched his legs out and relaxed after a long day in the saddle.
Boring. Just damn boring.
Pray that it stays that way. My father's power will no longer protect us from the renegades, especially Lone Dog. Silence! Someone comes.
The fire was quickly doused, and the men took their positions around the camp. The troopers were armed with six-shooters and single-shot Springfield 1873 carbines. Most of the Indians, with Winchester or Henry repeating rifles, were better armed than the soldiers they fought.
Oh, please, God, help me!
Easy. Could be a ruse to pull us out there. Just stay quiet for a minute.
Please! I saw your fire, and I know your soldiers. I've been watching you since you camped. My name is Terry Kelly. The Sioux hit us yesterday morning down on the Little Missouri, killed my uncle and aunt, and took several prisoners. I'm hungry, and I'm cold, and I'm scared. Please, help me!
Stand up and walk toward the sound of my voice. If Indians are forcing you to do this, you're going to be caught in a crossfire.
If I never see one of those murdering savages again, it will be fine with me.
Two wolves stirred beside Bodine, but said nothing.
All right, I see you. Come on.
Sharp eyes, boys.
The woman stepped into the protected area of the soldiers' camp. She wore a dress that was no more than rags. It was torn at the bodice, and she held that torn strip with one hand in an effort to cover her breasts. She sank to her knees in the center of the camp.
Oh, dear God. Safe at last. Oh.
Sergeant, double the guards.
Bodine got his canteen and moved to the woman's side. He brushed the honey blonde hair back from her forehead and wetted his kerchief, wiping the grime from the woman's face. He noted that she was quite a beauty.
Easy now, you're safe.
Are you sure?
I'm sure. The men are rigging some blankets so you can wash up and change clothes. Have you ever worn men's breeches? It's the best we can do, I'm afraid.
Oh, heavens no. Proper young ladies from Chicago don't wear men's breeches. But there's a first time for everything.
Bodine was no hand when it came to weeping women. He took off his jacket and rolled it up, putting it under her head, then covered her with a blanket handed him by a soldier. He sat back in a squat, watching her for a time. Two wolves brought some coffee and food and placed it beside Bodine. The woman wiped her eyes and looked at Two Wolves. Although dressed in white man's clothing, there was no mistaking his Indian side. The woman drew back in fright.
Relax. This is my brother, Sam August Webster Two Wolves. His father, Medicine Horse, was the first Cheyenne to make peace with the whites, and that peace is still good. You have nothing to fear here.
I'll have to take your word for that.
We're blood brothers, miss. Bodine saved my life when we were both just boys. My father adopted him into the Cheyenne tribe.
Bodine? The gunfighter?
I can use a gun, miss, when I have to. I'm a rancher down in Wyoming and sometimes scout for the army. What is your name again?
Terry. Terry Kelly. I came out here to teach school at a small settlement in Little Missouri. It's gone now.
She paused as Lieutenant Gary squatted down and began taking notes on a small pad.
You feel like telling us what happened?
Can I wash up first?
Of course you can.
Bodine held out his hand and she took it, very conscious of the strength in that outstretched arm. On her feet, Bodine noted that she was no shrinking violet. Terry Kelly was a good 5'6 or 5'7, and her figure was truly magnificent. It was no wonder the Braves were after her. She would have been worth a dozen horses in a trade, once she was beaten into submission.
I'm afraid you'll have to bathe in cold water, Miss Kelly, and I don't know what we're going to do about footwear for you.
I can fix her some moccasins. It won't take long.
You don't have a trace of an accent.
I was educated back east, Miss Kelly, as was my father. My mother came from a very old New England family.
Her suddenly cool eyes told him what she thought of any woman who would marry a red savage. She turned away and walked toward the strung-up blankets.
Should be an interesting trip back to the fort.
For some of us.
Bodine did his best to rig up a saddle for the woman to ride side saddle, but finally gave it up in frustration. She would just have to ride astride. Terry was appalled, and the men were embarrassed, but she gamely swung into the saddle just after dawn.
We've got a long and dangerous way to go, Miss Kelly. Right through hostile country. So be prepared for anything.
After the other night, I assure you that I am.
Colonel Travers will want to hear your story when we reach the garrison, as will I. We only skimmed it last evening.
My niece was drawing water when they came. She was 13. They ran a lance through her. Her mother, my Aunt Helena, ran to her and the savages killed her. My uncle hid me in the cellar just before they overwhelmed him. I lay amid the potatoes and the canned goods listening while they tortured him to death. But they couldn't make him scream.
He died well. They will sing songs about him around the fires.
Barbaric filth.
Different cultures, miss. I must tell you sometime about unarmed old Indian men and women who were lined up and shot down for the fun of it. Little Indian boys who were run down and trampled to death under the hooves of the cavalrymen's horses. Savages, Miss Kelly? We have them on both sides. Believe me, I've witnessed it firsthand.
She opened her mouth to speak, and Bodine rode to the head of the column.
That insufferable.
He was raised, sort of, by the Cheyenne, Miss Kelly. I could not abide the man when I first met him. But I've grown to both like him and respect his judgment.
I suppose I have much to learn about the wild frontier. I only got here in June.
Yes, Miss Kelly, you have much to learn.
Over a noon meal, Lieutenant Gary strode up to Bodine.
What are we going to do with her, Bodine?
That's Colonel Travers' worry, Gary. How'd she get out of the root cellar anyway?
They burned the house down over her. She breathed through a tiny hole in the foundation. She waited for several hours after they'd left before making a break for it. The entire tiny settlement was gone. She said she just ran in blind fear. Then she came to her senses and began following what she thought was the Little Missouri. And that's when she found us.
She's a lucky woman.
This is a confusing war, Bodine. I thought before I came out here that the issues were all clear-cut. I found that this is not the way it is. But I am a soldier, Bodine. I will do my duty and obey orders.
Right.
Terry slowly began to warm toward Bodine as the trek back to the fort continued. Two wolves did not stay with the column, choosing instead to range out far on either side or in front. Bodine knew he was deliberately staying away from the woman.
You've been out here a long time?
I was born out here. My father and mother came out years back, the first whites in the valley. Carved a place to live out of a wilderness. Fought Indians and blizzards, droughts and outlaws.
Bodine was very conscious of the woman's eyes on him.
Do you have a wife and children, Bodine? Is that your first name?
No to both your questions. And my name is Matt, but everyone calls me Bodine.
I expected a much older man. Your reputation would certainly suggest it. Your blood brother seems to be deliberately avoiding me.
I'm sure he is. He's trying to avoid a confrontation, knowing how you feel about Indians. And speaking of two wolves...
Bodine noticed his brother race his horse toward the column. Something was wrong.
Gary, head for that creek over there. I think we've got trouble.
Two wolves slid his horse to a stop.
Lone Dog and his bunch are about a half mile away, brother. And his followers have grown in number.
Get Terry to those cottonwoods over there by the creek. At least we'll have water and banks for some cover. Go!
Bodine whacked Terry's horse on the rump and then gave Rowdy his head, racing toward Gary. Far in the distance, even over the pounding of hooves, the war cries could be heard, coming closer. Lieutenant Gary's command was getting into position along the banks of the creek. In a wider and deeper part of the creek, sheltered by high banks and cottonwoods, the horses were being held. Winchester in hand, Bodine leaped from the saddle and got into position on the protected side of the cool and mossy bank. Lone Dog and his braves circled about 300 yards out, riding low against the necks of their ponies, offering little target for the short-barreled, single-shot carbines of the soldiers.
Two wolves! You would dare to fire at me?
You would dare to attack me? The son of Medicine Horse? The greatest Cheyenne warrior who ever lived?
Then ride out and live, two wolves! And take Bodine with you! We want the woman!
Go to hell!
Terry looked at the half-breed with a new understanding.
Your blood will stain the waters of the creek, just like the soldiers, two wolves!
Bodine looked at Gary, who was beside Terry on the bank.
If they overrun us, save one bullet for Miss Kelly, Gary.
The lieutenant nodded grimly. Terry's face went pale.
Get ready! They're about to charge us!
Look! The Cheyenne with Lone Dog are pulling back. They don't want to fight the son of Medicine Horse.
About 40 of the braves with Lone Dog had withdrawn to sit their ponies on the crest of a hill, watching and waiting. The braves of Lone Dog charged the creek from both sides. Bodine and two wolves knocked half a dozen sprawling, commencing firing with their long-barreled Winchesters a few seconds before the troopers. A half dozen more ponies were soon riderless as the seasoned cavalrymen opened fire. Lone Dog waved his braves back. The cavalry was too well armed. The Indians had long ago learned that to stand and die was stupid. Better to ride off and fight another day. They rode off, but they did not go far.
What are they doing?
Lone Dog has lost a dozen or more men in less than a minute. That is not good. You see the flankers, Bodine?
I see them.
What flankers? I don't see anyone.
Coming through the grass, crawling on their bellies. See that bush just to the right of that lightning blaze tree?
Yeah?
It won't be there a minute from now. The bush, not the tree.
When the lieutenant again looked over the terrain, the bush had moved several yards. Bodine lifted his rifle and got the bush in his sights. A brave leaped up, his chest smeared with blood. The brave fell on his back and did not move.
Here they come!
Some of the Sioux had crept to within a few yards of the creek, as silent as death.
Every other man, eyes to the front!
The lieutenant lifted his pistol and fired point blank into the Indian's chest. The slug turned the warrior around in midair and twisted his painted face into a pain-filled mask of hate. Gary lifted his six-shooter and shot the brave in the face, ending it. Two Wolves shot a brave in the head just as Bodine clubbed another with his rifle butt, kicked him between the legs of the boot, and smashed his throat with the butt of his Winchester. Lifting the rifle, he shot another one in the belly and again in the chest. The brief battle was over. Bodine looked toward Terry. A brave had leaped at her, and she had picked up the guidon carrying the colors. The brave had impaled himself on the pole, the end of it going directly in and through the belly. Two Wolves ended his pain with a single shot to the head. He stared at the brave for a moment.
Wokpe Nunuma.
Terry looked at Bodine.
Painted Thunder, the son of Grey Thunder, a sub-chief of the Sioux. Lieutenant, this is not good.
Hell, man, they attacked us!
We're on their lands.
Did you see the Arapahoes and the Hohe among them, brother?
Yes, and some Blackfeet and Cree. They're coming together, and that's even worse.
Let's get out of here.
Two Wolves pushed him back down to the moss.
Not unless you have a death wish. Lone Dog is crazy, but he's not stupid. They're just over the rise, waiting for us to do something foolish.
Then we'll stay here. We have ample water and plenty of rations. We'll be safe tonight.
How do you figure that?
Many Apaches don't fight at night. Depending on the tribe, many others don't either. Their fear is that if they are killed at night, their spirits will forever wander. But don't take any bets on this bunch not fighting at night. It all depends on their medicine.
What are they doing?
Both Bodine and Two Wolves listened carefully.
They're questioning their medicine for this day. I think it's over. If they start the chant for the dead warriors, we'll know it's over.
After a time, the chanting changed.
It's over for today. We'll wait a few minutes, then get out of here. We'll ride like hell for a time, eat, then ride some more before we make a cold camp for the night. With any luck, we can stay ahead of them. They'll have to take some time to find and to gather up their dead, then carry them off to prepare the warriors for prayers and burial. That'll give us an hour or so.
We'll drag some of the bodies off and hide them best we can. That will slow them up even more.
That's grotesque.
Beats being dead.
I agree. We've got some wounded. I know something about nursing. Let's get to work.
He cut his eyes to Two Wolves, who was also watching the woman. Two Wolves met his glance, and yet another challenge rose up between the two blood brothers. But this time, Bodine was not about to pick up the gauntlet. They rode hard for several hours, stopped and hurriedly fixed a meal. Then it was back in the saddle, putting more miles between them and Lone Dog's war party. When they finally made a cold camp for the night, it was carefully chosen for defense. They were up and moving as the first beams of silver creased the eastern sky. They rode for about an hour, with scouts out in four directions, then stopped and fixed coffee and bacon and bread.
Sam really is a very striking-looking man, Mr. Bodine.
Oh, two wolves. Yeah, I guess so. A couple of days ago, you wouldn't have spit on him if he was on fire. What changed your mind?
The way he told that Lone Dog to go to hell back at the creek. Both of you could have ridden out, couldn't you? Safely, I mean.
Yes, we could have.
Suddenly, all Bodine's defenses went up, and he found himself liking the woman less and less.
You have a big ranch, Matt?
Not too big. About 100,000 acres, I reckon. My dad's spread is about four times that big.
400,000 acres?
Yeah. And since Two Wolves is half white and can own land, his father, Medicine Horse, had my father file on land for him. Two Wolves owns a respectable spread, stretching from where our two ranches butt together all the way to the Montana line. There's a cabin on it, too. Snug little place built on a flat, overlooking a little creek.
Bodine just didn't like this woman. She had a staying quality to her. He wouldn't deny that. But he didn't think she had 15 cents worth of loyalty in her. Earlier, Bodine had seen her batting her eyes at Lieutenant Gary. The woman was making sure all bets were covered.
Mount up. We'll make the Yellowstone by late afternoon.
Two Wolves joined Bodine later that afternoon.
What a fine woman, brother. What's the matter with you? Well, your mouth is all poked out. You look like you have a toothache.
Bodine opened his mouth to warn Two Wolves about Terry. Then he closed it. What proof did he have? None. Except a gut feeling, and that might have been brought on by something he ate.
You were about to say?
Not a thing, brother.
Didn't you tell me that the valley needed a school teacher?
Yes, I did. We have a school, but no teacher. You have someone in mind?
Very funny. As a matter of fact, I mentioned it to Terry, and she's interested.
Oh, so it's Terry now, is it? That's nice.
She's highly qualified.
I'm sure she is. Why don't you speak to my mother and father about it? They'll get together with the other farmers and ranchers and decide.
But you won't give her your endorsement?
I didn't say that.
You didn't have to.
He turned his horse and rode back to Terry, just as Lieutenant Gary rode up.
What a delightful young lady. So well educated. She's the type of person we need out here on the frontier. It'll be a lucky man who wins her hand.
Right.
I don't mean to babble on, Bodine, but I'm quite impressed with her. To have such spirit after her terrible ordeal.
She's had a rough time of it, all right. But then, why didn't she kick up a fuss and demand that we chase after the Indians and rescue the prisoners they supposedly took? Odd. Very odd.
Gary stood up in his stirrups and pointed, a smile on his face.
We've reached the Yellowstone!
He sat back in the saddle and rode forward to take the point. Bodine looked back. Terry was riding beside Two Wolves and jabbering like an excited squirrel. From the expression on his face, Two Wolves was taking the bait, hook, line, and sinker. The column followed the Yellowstone down to a little town that would soon be named Miles City. There they stopped long enough for Miss Kelly to take a proper bath and to purchase new clothing, with money she borrowed from Lieutenant Gary and Two Wolves. Bodine had no intention of giving her a nickel. He had judiciously avoided her the past few days on the trail, assuming the role of scout just to stay away from the column. The column cut south and slightly west, following the tongue as it wound its way to the garrison, still some 100 miles farther on. As Bodine knew he would, Two Wolves came to his side just before Bodine pulled out for the day's scouting.
You don't like her, do you?
No, I don't, Two Wolves.
She told me you didn't. She's terribly hurt by your attitude towards her.
I imagine she'll get over it, brother.
She's really a very nice person.
Did I say she wasn't?
I need your endorsement to get her on as a teacher in the valley, Bodine. You know how many of the people feel about me.
That attitude will change as the story spreads about you facing Lone Dog and his braves by the creek. You know that. I'll make a deal with you, Two Wolves. I won't say a word for her or against her. I'll deliberately head for my place as soon as we get close enough, and that will give you a free hand to speak to my parents on her behalf. That is the best I can do. Good luck.
Bodine swung into the saddle.
You're jealous, aren't you?
You have to be crazy to ask that. I couldn't sleep at night knowing that damn woman was in the same house with me.
Two wolves stepped back, a hard glint in the dark eyes.
That will be the only time I allow you to speak about her in such a manner.
Don't crowd me, Sam. Now you want that woman? You can sure have her. Just keep her away from me.
You're judging her without knowing anything about her. That's not like you.
Study the Black Widow spiders, Sam. Especially the male. Watch what happens to him when the female is finished. Whether you believe it or not, you are still my brother, and I care about you.
In words only, Bodine. Nothing else. Not anymore.
He turned and walked away, his back stiff with anger. Bodine did not try to stop him. He looked over at Terry and met her eyes. She was smiling at him, a victorious smile. Bodine had seen a smile like that before, on a rattlesnake. Bodine left the column long before it reached the fort, despite Lieutenant Gary's protests that it was not safe for him to be riding off alone. He did so anyway. He cut straight south through the heavily timbered wilderness. At a trading post on the Pumpkin, he stopped for supplies and to gather any gossip there might be from the men gathered around the plank bar, the heavy planks set up on two empty barrels. The men drinking at the makeshift bar knew Bodine, but that did not stop them from talking.
Tom Thomas done bought up all the land around Cutter. All them men of his'n done each filed on a quarter section and proved it up. Then Thomas bought it from him. He owns land further than I can see all around that town. Gonna be a big man soon.
He was already a big man. Once he got over that putting down Bodine gave him.
Bodine caught the sly look given him by the men lined up at the bar. He chose to ignore the comment and sipped his beer.
Yeah, they tell me that Tom Thomas done put up $1,000 for any man who brings in Bodine across the saddle. All sorts of gun slicks drifting into the country. Word is that the money is due to go up most any time.
Where'd you hear this?
Oh, at the Kitty Cat and Cutter. Come from the bartender's mouth himself.
Couple weeks ago. So odds is the ante on you is going up, Bodine.
Bodine thought that was a reasonable assumption. He listened to the creak of saddle leather as several men dismounted and stretched muscles after hours in the saddle. He hoped it was just a couple of cowboys, but he doubted it.
Who's coming in, barkeep?
Gunnies, Bodine. Three of them. One of them is Stuttering Smith. I don't know them other two, but they look mean.
Bodine did not turn around. It was dim inside, and he doubted that the men would recognize him until their eyes adjusted from the bright sunlight of the outside.
Bring a bottle over here, Fats, and be damn quick about it.
Stuttering Smith was Quicksilver with a six-gun, and Bodine knew he would soon be facing him. He didn't know the other two, but if they were riding with Stuttering, they were good. Bodine signaled the bartender over. He came, but he didn't like being this close to what he figured would soon be the line of fire.
You sure those boys work for Thomas?
Yes, sir, I'm sure. Now, can I please get out of the way?
Move.
Bodine drained his beer and held the mug in his left hand. He walked across to the table where the three men were sitting.
Something on your mind?
Staying alive would be first and foremost. There's a lot of bad hombres roaming around the countryside. Most of them scum that work for Tom Thomas.
You best watch your smart mouth, mister, before someone takes them guns of yours and slaps you silly with them.
You feel like you're a big enough man to do that?
Stuttering pushed him back into the chair. He looked up at Bodine.
What's your interest in all this, mister?
Personal. My name's Bodine.
Stuttering knew that this close, everyone involved was going to get lead in them. He had heard too many stories about the young man called Bodine to dismiss him as a lightweight. One man started to rise, his hands lowering to his guns. Bodine swung the heavy beer mug, catching the man in the forehead. Pieces of the mug cut a deep gash in the man's head as he was knocked to the floor. Bodine kept his right hand close to the butt of his Colt. Bodine faced the second man across the rickety table. Stuttering kept his seat warm and his mouth shut.
I'm gonna be a rich man when I collect all that reward money that's on your head, Bodine.
Bodine shot him in the guts before the barrel could clear leather. The two-bit gun hand staggered backward, losing his six-shooter. He made a grab for his second gun. He stood for a moment, staring at the tall young man in front of him. The gun hand dropped to his knees on the dirty floor and toppled over. Bodine holstered both Colts and looked at Stutterin' Smith.
You feel lucky, Stutterin'?
Can't say that I do, Bodine.
The man with the bleeding forehead lurched to his feet with a curse and grabbed for a gun. Bodine hit him with a hard fist and knocked the man through the front window. He didn't move, but seemed to be still breathing.
You finish your drink, Stutterin'. Me and Rowdy will go our way, and you can take these two-bit friends of yours back to Cutter and give them to Tom Thomas. With my compliments.
I reckon I can do that.
True to his word, Bodine did not stop at his parents' ranch. He rode straight to his spread and began helping his few hands get ready for what was seemingly going to be a bad winter along the Powder. For a week, he did nothing except move cattle from the higher graze and chop firewood, stacking it alongside the cabin. At the beginning of his second week back home, as the winds were beginning to hold a sharp edge to them, his father rode down from his place on the Crazy Woman, accompanied by several of his hands. For with the Indian situation as it was not safe to ride alone. Over coffee, Bodine and his father jawed about the situation.
You and two wolves riding on opposite sides of the creek, boy?
That's one way of putting it.
I took one look at that woman he brought over to be the new school teacher and voted against her at the meeting.
And?
The others liked her. She's the new teacher at the school.
Something about that woman raises my hackles, Dad. I just don't trust her.
Yeah. Your ma said the same thing. But there's nothing we can do about it. She was chosen.
And Two Wolves is in love.
Head over heels. And I don't think that woman gives two hoots in hell for him. She's playing a game with him. Batting her eyes at that lieutenant while Two Wolves does all the work around her little place over by the school. And one of my men seen Tom Thomas come courting her.
Does Two Wolves know that?
I don't think so. Enough about that, boy. What's this about a bounty on your head? And this gunfight you was in over at the trading post and saloon?
It's true. Tom Thomas is behind it. Stutterin' Smith said as much.
Well, you and me are alone in our thinking about Tom Thomas, son. The other ranchers like him. Think he hung the moon and stars. And they don't like it because you whipped him.
You mean to tell me that the ranchers are accepting Two Wolves as a neighbor but rejecting me? Well, at least something good came of it.
Yeah. Tom Thomas is saying the Two Wolves came to his senses and accepted his white side, while you seem to be leaning toward the Injuns. That ain't good, boy.
They'll either get over it or they won't, Dad. Hell, Two Wolves, Lieutenant Gary, and Miss Kelly can verify that I killed Indians during that fight at the creek. What's the matter with the people around here?
Many of them are jealous. You and me, we got the biggest spreads in North Wyoming. Together, we control over 500,000 acres, near as I can figure. That makes a certain type of person edgy. There's a lot of minerals on our range, Matt. We got good water and good graze. I figure that when the Indian trouble is over, we're gonna have to fight some of our neighbors.
Let them try it.
Early one autumn morning, before the first snow fell, Bodine saddled Rowdy and set out, leading two pack horses, toward the settlement that would eventually be called Sheridan. As he rode, Bodine mused over why this land was embroiled in so much conflict. Why were the Indians and the whites killing each other over land that really not many on either side actually wanted to live in? This particular part of Wyoming did not contain enough agricultural land to support a great many settlers. And the buffalo were rapidly being killed off, so it was not such a desirable place for large numbers of red or white. On his way to the settlement, Bodine would pass the ghosts that wandered the battlefields, the wagon box fight, and the Fetterman slaughter. where back in 66, Crazy Horse and Red Cloud trapped and killed Captain Fetterman and his entire command. No, Bodine knew the current wars were not over control of territory. Wyoming just happened to be where the disputes between the red and the white person's way of life were being settled. And Bodine knew there was no way the Indians could win the war. Bodine crossed the Crazy Woman River just as it changed its direct southerly flow and began a gentle curve toward the southern tip of the Bighorns. As Bodine rode through the ash and box elders and toward the rolling hills, he tensed as Rowdy's ears came to attention. Bodine threw himself out of the saddle, taking his Winchester with him. Bodine grabbed the reins and pulled Rowdy and the pack horses back toward the banks of the Crazy Woman. He slid down the bank and the horses followed. Bodine quickly built himself a little fort out of old fallen logs and scooped up dirt. He had water, food, and plenty of ammunition, and the horses were safe. Now all he had to do was wait. Between Indians or some of Tom Thomas's men, Bodine bet on the latter. He settled down to wait them out. After a heated argument over Bodine, two wolves had left Terry the night before. He took off in a rage before he lost complete control and belted the woman. Cheyenne men were none too gentle in keeping a woman in her place, but all that was behind him now. Two wolves had ridden long into the night until coming to the Crazy Woman River. There, he had made his camp. He had lingered over coffee and jerky for breakfast, and then just saddled up and followed the Crazy Woman south. His thoughts were many and jumbled. He felt he truly loved the schoolteacher. He also felt that Terry was using him. He knew Terry was playing Lieutenant Gary for the fool, and rumors had reached his ears that Tom Thomas was slipping through her back door late at night, enjoying her favors. The ruthlessness of his thoughts upon hearing those rumors jarred two wolves right down to his toenails. What sort of game was Terry playing? What did she hope to gain by it? He missed Bodine. How long had it been since they'd sat and talked? They were both stubborn men, and neither was given to apologizing. Two wolves continued riding south, following the Crazy Woman. Bodine had located two of his ambushers, confirming that they were not Indians. He shifted positions and reared the hammer back on his Winchester. He smiled as he heard the yell, but it wasn't a yell of pain, more like a man very much surprised. He ducked down behind the riverbank. The rifle fire hit nothing, but it did confirm the number of men Bodine was facing. He figured four of them, and they had him in a pretty tight hole. At least for now. Come dark, he could slip out easily. Bodine watched and waited. Two wolves thought he heard gunfire, but he couldn't be sure. He sat his horse for a moment and listened. Nothing. Just as he was about to swing west, away from the river, the gunfire came again, very faint, but very real. Someone was in trouble. Two wolves urged his horse on, but very slowly. A bullet had tossed sand and pebbles into Bodine's face. They were getting his range. He'd heard rumors about Thomas upping the ante on his head to something between $5,000 to $10,000. Bodine decided to take the offensive. He left his makeshift fort and started upriver, hugging the bank as he worked his way toward a stand of trees that would enable him to leave the river. Two wolves had crossed the Crazy Woman twice, trying to determine which side of the river the gunfire was coming from. He finally decided the gunfire was coming from the north side of the river, just about where the Crazy Woman curved west. He moved away from the river to stay in the rolling hills. That move would put him above the heavier gunfire. Then he would decide whether to help or not. Bodine had made the thin timber and had spotted two of his ambushers, just as two wolves, on foot now and above the attackers, had caught a glimpse of Rowdy. Two wolves smiled thinly and squatted down, trying to determine how best he could help his ornery blood brother. Bodine sighted a man with his Winchester. Two wolves leveled his Winchester and shot an ambusher through the neck, the heavy slug almost taking the man's head off. The slug cut the spinal cord, and the man slumped bonelessly to the ground. Two wolves cupped one hand to the side of his mouth and called a meadowlark's lilt. Bodine smiled and returned the call. One of the attackers, sensing the battle was going sour, tried to make it to his horse. two slugs, one from below and one from above, cut him down, the 44s taking the man in the back and the side.
We yield! I'm laying down my rifle and standing up!
Me too!
Both men stood up, weaponless, their hands held in the air. Bodine and Two Wolves gathered up all the weapons while the prisoners, both of them sullen-faced and silent, sat on the cold ground, their hands behind their heads, watching as Bodine and Two Wolves stripped the bodies of the dead, and then they were tied into and over the saddles. Then they watched as the two remaining horses were stripped of their saddles.
Now you two stand up and peel down to your wherewithals.
Do what?
Strip. Buck-ass naked and do it quick.
I ain't gonna do it!
Bodine hit him in the mouth with the butt of his Winchester, smashing the man's lips and knocking out teeth.
Now what do you have to say?
All right!
The two men slowly began to peel until they stood naked and shivering in the cold winds.
Ain't you even gonna let us have no boots?
Nope. Now get on your horses and ride.
Bareback and us naked? Man, that ain't decent!
Neither you. Now get on your horses and ride out.
Man, there are engines out there. They find us like this, and we're in for a bad time of it.
I hope so. We'll probably hear the story of you boys riding in when we get to the settlement. Now get out of here.
No, this ain't right.
The men rode out, leading the horses carrying the dead and wounded behind them. Bodine and Two Wolves walked back to the river's edge.
I have saved your life, and a life saved is a life owed. Now we are even.
You didn't save Jack crap, Sam, so get off your high horse.
Bah! They would have killed you had I not arrived in time to rescue you.
Why, you pompous jackass. If I wasn't in a hurry to get to the settlement, I've a good notion to whip your butt and knock some sense into your head.
Not on your best day, Bodine.